Welcome one and all to episode 93 of the NFL Draft Breakdown Podcast. I'm your host, Seth Cox. With me tonight, my co-host, Justin Higdon. And Justin, we had some college football action on Saturday. I'll call it week zero. And then this week, it all gets underway. Starting off on Thursday night with your Ohio State Buckeyes. Taking on the Indiana Hoosiers in Bloomington. Fairly one-sided matchup for the Buckeyes. And then we get a full slate of games heading into the big one on Saturday night with Florida State taking on Alabama. There's a ton of prospects to watch, ton of games to watch. College football is officially back, and everybody's going to be better for it, hopefully.
Yeah, I was actually surprised they called it week zero on the broadcast when we watched this weekend. So, you know, they were completely cognizant of the fact that it doesn't really kick into gear until Ohio State plays, obviously. But, you know, we're going to recap a few of the big games that happened this past weekend. There were three notable games. And then we've got a huge slate coming up this weekend. Even though it seems like the action's few and far between, there are some very meaningful games. Of course, I will be at Iowa to see Wyoming travel to Iowa and play the Hawkeyes, to see Josh Allen play the Hawkeyes. So I'm very excited for that. I'm very excited for the Florida State-Alabama game. And obviously, I'm very excited for this Thursday's game with Ohio State traveling to Bloomington. You said that it's going to be kind of a cakewalk, but I disagree. Bloomington, Indiana, the Hoosiers always give Ohio State fits, and it's going to have some intrigue because Kevin Wilson, the former Indiana head coach, is now Ohio State's offensive coordinator. And so you've got a little intrigue there, and we're going to talk about that in a minute.
Yeah, but let's get started with the week zero, just kind of the review. And again, the games themselves, I mean, it was college football, so it's enjoyable. But, I mean, let's be honest. Let's call it what it was. It wasn't exactly great football. But we saw – to start off, Stanford, I think they are still scoring touchdowns against Rice. It was just a complete massacre. It wasn't unexpected by any means. But I think you have to like what you saw to Bryce Love, the running back out of Stanford. 13 carries for 180 yards. Again, something that we've talked about, you know, a lot on this show before is when these guys get a chance to put up big numbers, they need to do it. And running backs, especially in college, that put up big numbers are a dime a dozen. So the 180 yards is less impressive than the fact that he did it on only 13 carries. He really dominated the game. And that's what you wanted to see from not only Stanford, but from their, you know, better draft prospects coming out of that game.
Well, Stanford is obviously looking for a replacement for Christian McCaffrey. So the question is, can Bryce Love be that replacement? And Bryce Love being a junior, the all eyes are on him. And he comes out against Rice, inferior competition, but he puts up a dominant performance against the inferior competition. It's exactly what you want to see. We didn't get to see him in the passing game because the game was well out of hand very early on, so that's to be determined. Stanford has a few NFL draft-worthy prospects, and unfortunately, this is not the kind of game that we get to showcase all of those prospects, but we do get to see a huge performance from Bryce Love, so that's the one noteworthy take that we can take from this game. I mean, this guy's an undersized running back, so he's going to get that passing down back stigma. Now, can he move beyond that? We'll see in the coming years if he decides. I've not thought that Bryce Love is going to be a guy that declares early, but it's very good for a guy like that to get off to an early start in his junior season, because that now all systems are go, and if he can carry this on, then it becomes later on in the season, it becomes a topic of discussion of whether or not he can declare early. At this point, I would still say he's a long shot to declare early, but look, he's got huge shoes to fill, and he goes out and gets 180 yards in his first game. That's gotta feel good for him.
Stanford continues to do enough with the quarterback position. Keller Crist, I believe he was a 5-star recruit, right? 3 years ago, 4 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, he fits right into that mold that they've had. We poo-pooed Kevin Hogan on this show, and with good cause, but he's still hanging around in the NFL and has a good chance to even be the Cleveland Browns' number two quarterback at this point. So you have to like what you've seen out of Keller Crist, but it's just one game, and it's against a very
bad
team.
Yeah. South Florida, Charlie Strong's first game for the Bulls looked shaky to start the game, down 16-0 in the first quarter, and then just absolutely obliterated the San Jose Spartans. 42-22 final score. So the last three quarters, they outscored the Spartans 42-6, including a 28-0 second quarter to really, you know, basically seal the game. Quentin Flowers is a guy that's gotten some hype in the preseason, not necessarily draft hype, but hype nonetheless. And we talked about him last week. He's going to have a lot to overcome, you know, 6 foot tall quarterback. But the main thing that he was going to have to do this year was improve on his career passing accuracy. And game one didn't do that. Only completed 47% of his passes. He's an intriguing athlete. He's a good quarterback for the college system, but I think, you know, we kind of hit the nail on the head with that he's probably a non-draft pick at this point.
I thought that Quentin Flowers came out and looked really jittery in this game. He wasn't very impressive to me early on when San Jose State was building that lead. But the one thing that you can look at with Quentin Flowers that was impressive is he has great arm strength and he has a good deep ball. He has trajectory and the spin that you want to see on that deep ball. But the problem is, like, he does not have the accuracy that you want, and he's flinging that ball from a three-quarters delivery. It's just very sloppy. The stride's not where you want it to be. The arm slot is not where you want it to be, and he is fleeing that pocket immediately. And I'm sure that's by design in the offense in some ways because he's such a talented athlete. But the problem is that you just don't get a good read. And as we talked about on our last show with Justin Mello, this is a player who is listed at 6 feet tall, 210 pounds. He's probably going to clock in just under 6 feet tall. And that's going to be a red flag to NFL scouts. The arm slot is going to be a red flag. The arm strength is going to be intriguing, but it's not going to be enough to outweigh the other negatives. I don't think this kid is ever going to get a chance from NFL scouts as a quarterback. And this is not a Trevon Boykin situation where Boykin was an unconventional quarterback who also had experience at receiver. Boykin, to me, looked like a better quarterback, and I just didn't see that out of Quentin Flowers. I haven't seen that out of him prior to this year. I didn't see it out of him Saturday. And, in fact, I thought he was quite frustrating to watch. The one thing that I thought was pretty was the deep ball. He was on target with it on a number of throws. And I did like the fact that he could really let the ball rip, but I just don't think that it's there for him to be a professional quarterback. And I've seen some people with some projections that, like, USF is going to be that team that's going to
surprise,
kind of push the envelope as far as playoff teams. And that just didn't look like the case at all. I mean, they have a couple decent running backs and everything, but I know that the for some reason the Charlie Strong thing still has some kind of panache, but I don't buy it. I think that South Florida is going to be, they might be a one or two loss team, but there's no way I see them being better than like Houston was a couple of years ago when they were undefeated, and they just don't have that kind of talent. I think Flowers is decent, but he's decent like a college quarterback, not like a pro prospect.
When you look at this weekend, it closed out, or didn't close out necessarily in terms of games, but we'll close out this weekend's look with a look at the Colorado State Oregon State game, where you just saw Colorado State absolutely obliterate Oregon State, embarrassing loss to start the Pac-12 season. For the Pac-12, I should say. Obviously, it's not an in-league game, but when you look at that game overall, two players stuck out to you when you watched it. Who are those players?
The best prospect in the game is probably Colorado State's wide receiver, Michael Gallup. And I wouldn't say he really impressed me a ton, but he lived up to his billing, which is what I thought of a high-level wide receiver prospect coming out of a non-Power 5 conference would look like. So maybe he's this year's – the question is going to be, is he this year's Rashard Higgins, a guy coming from his own alma mater who went in the fifth round despite some hype, or is he this year's Zay Jones, a guy who came out of a Group of 5 conference and elevated his stock all the way up to – a day two pick. On the surface, he looks like he's going to be a better athlete than Rashard Higgins, but it's hard to tell because I never thought that Zay Jones was going to test out the way that he did last year. I think Gallup did a good job of getting open, especially getting open underneath and then pulling away, separating on some seam routes, some posts. He looks like he has good hands and he looks like he has good ability after the catch. This is a player, I watched him and I thought, all right, this is a guy I've got to track throughout the season. This guy looks like an NFL player. So that is a plus in his column, but I'm just not sure that he's going to be deserving of the hype that he's going to get eventually. So this is a to be determined, but it's saying that there's something there. There's something there. The other Colorado State guy that impressed me, though, was the offensive lineman, Zach Golditch. And I think he's my sleeper of the week because he was alternating between left tackle and right tackle throughout the game. And this is a guy who's lightly recruited, as far as I understand. And I don't know why they were rotating him from left to right side, but he seemed to be holding his own in pass protection. But where he was really impressing me was in the run game, where he was – a quite accomplished run blocker. He was driving his man off the line of scrimmage, moving him down the line. The leg drive was there. The athleticism appeared to be there. When he had to pick up guys at the second level in the red zone on short yardage touchdown, he did that. And I'm not really sure. I can understand why some offensive line guys are not highly recruited because sometimes they have to grow into their body. And sometimes, like Jack Conklin, for example, was a player who was not recruited at all and had to send coaches tape of him water skiing or on a jet ski or something like that and convince him of his athleticism that way. So Golditch, we saw Ty Sambrello come out of Colorado State a few years ago. Golditch actually looks more athletic to me. And Sambrella was one of those water ski guys who sent – he had – I think he was actually a snow skier, but he was one of those guys who tried to advertise his athleticism because of the different sports he was involved in. This guy, Golditch, looks like a legitimate player, but I would probably pinpoint him at guard for right now because his skill set looks like drive blocking out of the run game. And he did it very well on Saturday. So this was a player I didn't even go into the game looking at, but I kept seeing his number And I kept seeing him switching side to side, and it was like, who is this guy?
Two other games occurred this weekend. We didn't watch them, full disclosure. BYU took on Portland State and won 20-6. Hawaii barely beat UMass 38-35. If you want information on BYU, his name just escaped me. But if you want information on UMass, check out Jinx on the Twitter. He's usually tweeting about UMass prospects that'll never get drafted. So you can find all that information there. Chandler Milliner, sorry, that's the BYU guy that you can go follow on Twitter. So he's back from his mission and back at BYU. So he's excited, and you can follow him for any BYU draft prospect information. Thursday, we're only going to talk about two games, but there are about 90 on the schedule. It's crazy to me how many games are getting played this Thursday night. Florida International, UCF, Presbyterian takes on Wake Forest, Austin, PA, Cincinnati, Buffalo at Minnesota, Tennessee State at Georgia State, Elon, Toledo, Rhode Island, Central Michigan, Holy Cross, Connecticut, North Dakota, Utah, Florida A&M, Arkansas, Louisiana, Monroe, Memphis, Sacramento State, Idaho. Those are all, you know, interesting games. And then you have some games with some really top-tier prospects. Tulsa takes on Oklahoma State. We're going to get to see Mason Rudolph and James Washington for the first time this year, albeit this game will probably end up being close, in the over right around the 120 combined range. So not much defense to be played. Obviously, we'll talk about Ohio State and Indiana, but let's start with New Mexico State and Arizona. And one of the takes that are starting to come about from the draft world and the fantasy world, and that's Kalen Ballage out of Arizona State. They're going to take on New Mexico State. It's going to be roughly 110 degrees in Tempe, right around kickoff time, 7:30 at night. It's going to be miserable. Ballage is going to be a guy that's sharing carries with DeMario Richard for, you know, his final season. Tony Pauline, the kind of godfather of the draft information world, he's got Ballage with a fourth round grade. Meanwhile, Fantasy Twitter and Dynasty Twitter really like Ballage.
They really love his ankle flexion, I think.
and we saw that kind of come to a head on a tweet the other day. I think it was today the 28th. I don't even know what day of the week.
This was actually on Monday, right?
Monday. And this was Bruce Mattson at BMats08. He's a writer for DL Football and NFL Spin Zone. Kalen Ballage greater than Kareem Hunt. Obviously, Hunt is in the – looks like he's going to be one of the more impactful rookie running backs in the NFL this year, at least going to get the opportunity to be. Ballage is still splitting carries in Arizona, you know, with Arizona State, like I said. I've watched Ballage's entire career. There may not be a better athlete on the field in any game when he's on the field, but there always seems to be a lot in terms of better football players. Is that the concern with Ballage kind of moving forward here?
100%. I mean, the concern is that it seems that the coaches think that there's a better running back on Ballage's own team consistently. He's never been able to produce consistently. He's always had one hot or cold game here and there. I mean, I'm sorry, he's only really had one or two hot games per season, and the rest have been kind of cold, or he's clearly an impressive athlete. I mean, some of his best rushing comes out of the Wildcat. He's got great speed for a guy his size, a guy over 225 pounds, 6'2", but he doesn't seem like he's an actual running back. So Kalen Ballage more of like a Marcel Reese. The NFL seems to view him, at least as far as we can gather from the Tony Pauline take, the NFL seems to value him as kind of a gimmick player or like a super back type of player. Like I said, with Reese or Dan Vitale from Northwestern, who also tested through the roof at the NFL Combine. It's very difficult for me to reconcile when fantasy Twitter or developmental draft Twitter talks about a guy who is clearly going to test well. I mean, I understand that, and you guys know me. If you've listened to the show, you know I'm all about the testing, the athleticism, but you've got to have the production too. And at this point, Kalen Ballage has always split carries, and that has to be a concern. The only thing that's going to remedy this for me is if Kalen Ballage becomes the go-to guy this season. He's a senior. He's got to take the reins. And at this point, it doesn't seem that they trust him. Is it a matter of coaching not trusting him? I don't know. But I'm not going to take that gamble and elevate this guy to a level where I'm going to say he's better than Kareem Hunt. Kareem Hunt had three seasons of elite production to the point where he was a third-round draft pick coming out of the MAC. And I understand that his athletic testing was the top. But, you know, with these running backs, I'm not quite sure how much this athletic testing, how much the speed, how much this agility really takes precedent. Like at some point, you've just got to look at what these guys do. Now, for me, Hunt was a day two player, a late day two player, and I think he went in the right range. Ballage, yet to be seen, but I am impressed with his ability as a receiver. I am impressed with his ability as an athlete. But to just go on a blanket statement and say that he's better than Kareem Hunt, I don't think he is. He's to me right now, he's certainly not a better running back than Kareem Hunt. Is he a better athlete than Kareem Hunt? Probably. But I don't know what that means as far as an NFL career. So we've got to gauge that, and I don't think that it's going to end up with him being a higher draft pick. I think Tony Pauline's kind of on track when he says that that Ballage is a fourth-round guy.
Richard and Ballage came in together, DeMario Richard and Kalen Ballage came in together in 2014 at Arizona State. Four carries as a true freshman, 209 carries as a true sophomore, 155 carries last year, battled through some injuries, and really ineffective play, 3.8 yards per carry. Every year, he's out-carried Kalen Ballage. Kalen Ballage had 42 carries as a true freshman, 125 carries as a true sophomore, and then 126 carries at last year. The concern, obviously, is, you know, what can he do with a full load? Can he be a guy that takes on a full workload as a running back? 293 carries for just over 1,300 yards is, you know, not great when you put it in a scope of, you know, a complete statistical career. The thing that you like about Ballage, and even though, you know, he had 14 touchdowns or 15 total touchdowns in 2016, eight of those came in one game. So, you know, if you take those eight out still, and you take out the touches as well in that game, he still had seven touchdowns on only 113 carries on the season. So he does have a nose for the end zone, despite, you know, Richard kind of being more of a in between the tackles pounding back. Ballage gets all the goal line carries. You know, he's a unique player in that sense.
He got all the goal line carries against Texas Tech out of the Wildcat. But I mean, that the problem is Richard is still there, and to this point he's gotten more carries. So why? My question is, what's going to happen to make them flip-flop that workload? I don't see it happening. And so what you're going to be left with is if you're going to be a Kalen Ballage stan, you're going to be trying to convince people like me that it's okay that he didn't lead his middle of the road Pac-12 team in carries.
Well, let's be completely fair. They're not middle of the road. They're terrible.
His bottom of the barrel Pac-12 team in carries.
Exactly. And that's what you have to, you know, that's what you have to worry about. Ohio State taking on Indiana. We talked about the Big Ten. You know, we just talked about Kalen Ballage and what we want to see from him this year. JT Barrett, probably, you know, not a pro prospect. Maybe a late round kind of backup quarterback type guy. But can Weber Jr., you know, Mike Weber Jr. and Sam Hubbard and these guys, you know, do they need to make an opening statement to put themselves kind of on the map in terms of 2018 prospects?
Well, I think Ohio State has a statement to make because they just got shut out in a playoff game. And that's the memory that's fresh in everybody's mind, right? So they open on the road against a Big Ten opponent. Normally, Ohio State gets to open against a couple of cupcakes before they go against a good out-of-conference opponent, and then eventually they start to open up the Big Ten schedule. But in this case, they are opening up on the road in the Big Ten against Team Indiana that's given them some problems in the past. Indiana always just seems up for Ohio State. Now, Indiana's former head coach, Kevin Wilson, is now Ohio State's offensive coordinator. The question is, can Kevin Wilson, the new offensive coordinator, can he elevate JT Barrett's draft stock? I mean, JT Barrett seems to have stagnated as a quarterback. As we talked about in our Big Ten preview, he seems to have stagnated as far as a developmental quarterback prospect. He went from, hey, this guy's pretty good as a redshirt freshman, to, hey, this guy stinks, but he can run Urban Meyer's system. So can Kevin Wilson elevate him beyond that? Mike Weber Jr., he's been nursing a hamstring injury throughout Ohio State fall practice. Apparently he's good to go. The question is, he's a redshirt sophomore. Does he have a big year and then go pro? This is a deep stable of running backs always at Ohio State, so there's always the next man up. We saw Ezekiel Elliott leave as a true junior. Now, Mike Weber performed pretty well as a redshirt freshman. It's 6 yards per carry, over 1,000 yards. It's pretty rare for an Urban Meyer back to go over 1,000 yards. Carlos Hyde and Ezekiel Elliott are the only other two guys to do it. So Mike Weber did it as a freshman. I fully expect him to pick up where he left off as a sophomore. He's going to take off. The big thing to watch here for me is Ohio State's defensive line, because their defensive ends run four deep, and you have three draft-eligible prospects, including two seniors. Tyquan Lewis, Jalen Holmes are the seniors, and then Sam Hubbard, who I think you mentioned, he's a redshirt junior. They've also got Nick Bosa. He's a sophomore, a true sophomore, not draft-eligible. But look at that four-man defensive end rotation, and you're going to have three early draft picks within the first 75 picks.
The big one that you'll be at, our buddy Kyle Posey will be at, it's going to be probably the biggest test of the season for Josh Allen as Wyoming takes on Iowa in Iowa. Yes, Iowa lost two stars in the college ranks in Desmond King and Jaleel Johnson on defense, but they still return a very formidable group defensively. Now you're looking at, can Josh Allen go in there and perform? Now, this won't affect most people, but you and I, you know, are non-Allen believers in the sense of that he is quarterback one heading into this year type of thing. You know, we're not saying he's not a prospect. We're just saying he's not quarterback one like some people believe. Is this game really, I mean, if he lights it up, obviously you and I will happily come on the show and talk about, you know, we may be wrong. Maybe this kid, you know, is taking those steps that he needs to take. But if he really struggles, is there plenty of time for him to recover the rest of the season? Or does the lack of talent he'll be taking on the rest of the season kind of negate anything that happens? I mean, to be fair to him, he's lost some of his best weapons, his best offensive lineman. And so you're expecting not the worst, but you're expecting there to be some struggles. But if he's truly quarterback one, we shouldn't see a performance like we did against Nebraska last year, right?
Absolutely. I think this is a crucial game for him. As I talked about last week when we talked to Justin Mello, and he said this is kind of like, you know, if he doesn't perform well against Iowa, he still has a lot of time to make up for the mistakes that he might make on Saturday. But to me, he doesn't. He has to perform well in this game because to this point, he has not performed well in these big games. He did not perform well against Nebraska. That was his one shot at a Power 5 opponent last year during the regular season. And then against San Diego State, he was 50-50 in the regular season and then in the Mountain West Championship. And then when it came time for the bowl game when they played BYU, he was 50-50 again in terms of first half versus second half. First half was rough. Second half, he led somewhat of a comeback. Now, granted, that particular game against BYU was done in the rain, but you want to see this guy elevate. And now we're seeing some of his players. We've got Brian Hill, who's in Atlanta. He's probably going to, I don't know, he's either going to make their roster or end up stashed on their injured reserve because he had an ankle injury. You've got Tanner Gentry, an undrafted rookie wide receiver who's looks poised to make the Bears roster. And then you've got their center, Chase Roullier, who looks poised to make an NFL roster as well. That's pretty good talent for a group of five team, right? There's three starters who are potentially going to make NFL rosters out of their first training camps. And it's hard to convince me that this guy didn't have the talent that he needed. And now you're going to tell me that those guys are gone and he's going to get better? I'm skeptical. I think I need to see a big-time performance against him. Or I think I need to see a big-time performance from him against Iowa. And it doesn't mean a win. I'm not talking QB wins with a Z. I'm talking a steady performance. Like you said, Seth, it can't be Nebraska. It can't be a five-interception game. It has to be a steady performance. Wyoming can lose to Iowa in a close game, but Josh Allen can't go out and throw five picks. He's got to be steady. He's got to show that he's making better decisions, and he's got to convert some crucial third downs, get them into the red zone, get them into position. I'll give you an example. Last weekend, DeShone Kizer making his start in a Cleveland Browns' third preseason game. His numbers were ugly, 6 of 18 with an interception. But what people don't know if they didn't watch the game is that Kenny Britt dropped a third down conversion in the red zone. That would have been a first down. It was on target. He just dropped it. Corey Coleman was called for an offensive pass interference on a back shoulder throw that would have converted another third and long. On the next play, on third and 20-plus, Kizer throws a pick. Later in the game, there's a situation where Kizer drives them down into the red zone and Duke Johnson fumbles. So that 6 of 18 could have been much differently. It could have looked much differently if his teammates would have converted those opportunities. When I looked at Josh Allen against Nebraska, for example, that wasn't the case. It wasn't a case of a guy whose teammates cost him five interceptions. It was a case of a guy making poor decisions. So now as a redshirt junior, he's got to be the guy making good decisions. That's what I'm looking for on Saturday. I'm very anxious to see him because I think that he has an opportunity to make big strides here and prove guys like me, guys like you who have been doubting him wrong, and at least point us in a different direction. So I think this game is 100% crucial for Josh Allen.
Another big game prospect-wise this weekend is Michigan at Florida. We've talked about the lack of quarterbacks in some of these top teams. Florida and Michigan are both, you know, in that discussion. Wilton Spate, we talked about, he's going to get the tall, strong arm quarterback boost that these guys tend to get in later rounds. You know, the Nate Sudfeld, the John Skelton type boost there.
And so, he's going to get the Harbaugh boost.
That's true as well.
Let's not kid ourselves. He's going to get the Harbaugh boost. Jake Rudock is a quarterback too in Detroit after 1 year, after many people thought he was a non-prospect.
And when you look at this game, it's more going to come down to the talent everywhere else. Now we talked about Florida. They're going to be missing some guys because of suspension. So this should really be a Michigan win when you're just looking at it from a overall view perspective. At the end of the year, it's going to look a lot better than it may actually be because of the suspensions. But are we going to miss a ton of prospects in this game, or are we still going to be able to see some of the talented prospects from Florida, Justin?
The guys I'm looking at in this game are really a couple offensive linemen. You've got Martez Ivy, who's moving to left tackle for Florida, and you've got Mason Cole playing center at Michigan. Those are a couple of guys I think are going to be crucial for both of their teams throughout the season. Cole at least has a season where he's already played center, but Ivy is moving to left tackle. These are two highly regarded offensive linemen, and Ivy is going to be tasked with, you know, we know that Michigan, they lost a ton of defensive linemen, but they have a lot of young defensive linemen, recruits, filling those gaps coming in. They're going to bring some pressure. So Ivy is key on Saturday. Mason Cole is key for Michigan on Saturday too, keeping Spate clean. So to me, the defensive line, offensive line battles are the key to this Michigan-Florida game. I think there is legitimate NFL talent on both sides of both lines. It's just that the immediate NFL draft talent are those two guys, Martez Ivy, Mason Cole. Those are the two spotlight guys for me.
Sam Darnold, maybe the top prospect in the 2018 NFL draft, gets a interesting Western Michigan team. Let's put it that way. Coming off, you know, the best year in school history, their coach heads for greener pastures, supposedly. Now you get Darnold, the Heisman favorite, the All-American, the number one overall pick favorite.
Heisman favorite boggles my mind, right? He's not the type of guy who wins a Heisman.
It would be predicated on, obviously, statistically, him, you know, his 9-game extrapolating to 12 games or 13 games, I guess,
he'd be the ultimate, like, 1995 Heisman or exactly. 1996. I mean, like, Sam Darnold's not a runner. He's not going to score. He's not going to gather touchdowns on the ground. If you bet on Sam Darnold for Heisman, you pissed away your money.
But he gets a pretty friendly start to the season, and it's not his fault. He doesn't make the schedule. He has nothing to do with the schedule. That was decided long before he was even at USC. But are you know, is this just a case of how much he plays and how many points he hangs on Western Michigan as they open the season up in LA in the Coliseum.
Yeah, it's just this game's just the Sam Darnold watches on. You know, it doesn't have to do with it doesn't have to have any great weight. In fact, I expect them to jump out to an early lead and hang some points on Western Michigan early.
He may not even play the fourth quarter if they're up by enough.
No, I mean, they have Ronald Jones, a fantastic running back, and they've got some exciting young running backs backing up Jones. So I think that they can, if they can get out there and pad the stats early, the only thing that's going to be that's going to really make a statement is if Sam Darnold and USC can't score on Western Michigan early. Because as you alluded to with Western Michigan, they've got a coaching change. PJ Fleck, the guy who rode the boat, the guy who took them to the double-digit win season and took them to the glory land, he is gone. And now they are on to a new head coach. And USC absolutely has to take advantage of the situation and just blow them out of the water. They're at home. There's no excuse. So Sam Darnold puts up big numbers in the first half and then sits and watches. I think that's the goal. And if that doesn't happen, then that's the conversation.
Louisville at Purdue, and we're talking about this simply because is making his debut at Purdue. He's been a stellar coach at Western Kentucky the last three seasons, but not necessarily in a defensive sort of way, which means Heisman, you know, the Heisman winner of 2016, the guy that should be the proverbial favorite again, Lamar Jackson, starts the season off against a Purdue team that's going to probably give up a lot of points.
Lamar Jackson is – Why wouldn't he be the Heisman favorite? What is different about this year than what we had laid out for Lamar Jackson last year? And if you don't expect him to improve on last year, why not? I mean, the scene is set for him to improve. So I like this game because you've got the Louisville connection because of Jeff Brohm, the former Louisville quarterback, and he actually coached there for a time too. His brother went there. But like you said, Seth, 30-10 at Western Kentucky in three seasons. But those games, look at those Western Kentucky games. Fun, fun team, but lots of shootouts. I think Lamar Jackson's going to destroy Purdue.
I was going to say, he's going to make a statement in game one that he should be the Heisman favorite still.
Yeah, he will. And I hope that Bobby Petrino gives him an opportunity to make that statement with his arm initially. Because I think that Lamar Jackson can go out and beat a team like Purdue with his arm without going into all the crazy. He's a fantastic runner. We already know that. We already know that from the past two seasons. Let's see Lamar Jackson go out and dominate Purdue with his arm. I think it's completely realistic, and I hope Bobby Petrino has a game plan for him to go out and do that. No disrespect to Jeff Brohm, because I loved that Purdue was able to bring in Brohm. I think that a guy like Brohm can bring Purdue back into a level of competition in the Big Ten. Maybe not to the point where they're competing for Big Ten championships, but at least being a competitive team within the Big Ten.
The final matchup is, you know, one that could have ripples over the entire college football landscape this year. Florida State, Alabama. Maybe the best players in the game are young players that won't be draft eligible, but there are a ton of draft eligible talent as well. The problem may be, especially for Florida State, you may not see those guys, especially in the secondary, get a chance to do the work that they do best. Alabama's passing game is not great. we may not get to see a ton of Calvin Ridley because of that. And on the flip side, though, you should see a lot out of DeAndre Francois, the Florida State quarterback, who, you know, depending on what he does this year, could be a guy that flirts with the draft. And then obviously the stellar defense of Alabama, as they always are. Which matchup is the most intriguing to you going into this game?
I want to see Francois passing down the field against Alabama's top defensive backs, the cornerbacks, Minka Fitzpatrick and Anthony Averett, because I think that Francois is an intriguing prospect. He's undersized. We kind of talked about this last week. We wish he was a bigger guy, but he's so tough, hangs in the pocket. He's got a great arm, and he's going to be tested like no other. You know, he comes into this game. Last year, we saw Francois rise to the occasion as a redshirt freshman in a similar game, you know, as far as national spotlight. He was playing against Ole Miss, granted not as tough of a defense, but on a Monday night game, standalone game, and he went out there and he played his guts out. Now he's playing against some of the top defensive backs in the country, especially Fitzpatrick. He's going to have a lot of pressure. We know that Nick Saban is going to bring the heat. And Francois without Dalvin Cook. He's going to have Jacques Patrick. And then he's going to have Auden Tate and a couple other guys. But, you know, Francois is a guy who has shown he can hang in there. He's shown he's up to the level. So I like this matchup a ton for him. I don't want DeAndre Francois to declare as a redshirt sophomore, but I understand that the economics of it suggests that he might. So this could be a huge springboard for him. But the other things I'm looking at in this game is Deshaun Hand, one of the most hyped defensive line prospects to come out of high school in the past, like, 10, 15 years. Is he finally going to be the breakout guy? Is he Alabama's breakout guy on the defensive line? And Derwin James, the all-world safety on Florida State, he is projecting to be the type of safety that's, like, I don't want to compare guys, but people want him to be the next Sean Taylor. He's 6'3", 210 pounds. He's coming off that meniscus injury. We talked about that in our ACC preview with Justin Mello. Derwin James coming into this game. As you said, Seth, I don't know how much Florida State's defense is going to be tested on downfield passing with Jalen Hurts, but Derwin James has an opportunity. 4.5 sacks as a freshman, 9.5 tackles for loss, and he has been on ice since week 2 with that meniscus injury. This is his coming out party, and I think he's one of the elite prospects in the 2018 draft.
Cam Akers is the freshman phenom, and he's the guy, you know, he's the guy that, like I said, he may end up being the best player that comes out of this game, which is saying something for all the great players that will be coming out of this game.
I know, right? But, I mean, you could say that about, you could say that about Derwin James. Maybe it's going to be Francois. We don't know. Maybe it's going to be Hand. I mean, he's been on ice, so to speak, but he was one of the most highly recruited defensive line guys that we've seen, and they've spoken so highly of Deshaun Hand, and then he gets a DUI, and Nick Saban is absolutely not going to suspend him. So if you know, there are so many big time prospects in this game.
Finally, to kind of wrap up the show tonight, we already gave you the hot take for today, and that was of course fantasy Twitter's love of Kalen Ballage over a dynamic college running back in Kareem Hunt. other players that we didn't really get into, and we'll see how they do, and we'll definitely catch up on them next week. Josh Rosen takes on Texas A&M. Should be a fun game overall.
I think BYU, that's huge. I mean, Josh Rosen, we've talked about it, the shoulder injury. He says, well, we heard it was a nerve thing. And then Rosen told people in interviews that it was a tear in the muscle. Really looking forward to Josh Rosen, because if his play matches the hype, then we get the hot takes about his personality.
Oh, I can't wait for that. It's going to be fantastic. You know, BYU versus LSU has been moved to New Orleans because of Hurricane Harvey. Anybody that listens to the show in Houston, you know, stay safe. We have a buddy that lives down there, Ian Wharton. You know, we hope everything's going well for you, Ian, and everybody else that's there. And finally, you know, two of the top running backs in this class who absolutely, you know, we passed over Darius Geis, obviously, but, you know, he's gonna have at least a formidable opponent in BYU this week. Formidable. But two of the top prospects, Saquon Barkley and Nick Chubb. Saquon Barkley gets Akron. Nick Chubb gets Appalachian State. You expect both of those guys to not see much of the field in the second half in these games. If they do, you know, how do they look? Are they being kept down by, you know, inferior opponents? Obviously, that will dictate. But if we see a stat line from these guys of 9 carries for, you know, 65 yards and 2 touchdowns, that won't be shocking in the least.
I think that's expected for all three of these guys. Whether we're talking about Geis against BYU in the Superdome, whether we're talking about Saquon Barkley against Akron, this is why I wanted to talk about these three guys, because we've got the three top running backs, and I think most people have already got it narrowed down to the two top running backs, Geis and Barkley, right? So Geis is going to face BYU, who had a more of a struggle against Portland State than you would like to see last weekend. Now, hopefully that was just getting the rust out. Now they've got to go and on the road and in New Orleans to play LSU. Darius Geis should have a lot of success against BYU. Saquon Barkley should be able to tear up Akron, right? And Nick Chubb, who is kind of the forgotten man, he gets Appalachian State. Or, I'm sorry, is it Appalachian State? I want to make sure I pronounce that right. But Nick Chubb is now a full season removed from that devastating knee injury. I actually thought that Nick Chubb afforded himself pretty well last year coming back from a horrible knee injury and was able to play the whole season. I think people are – as anybody who's listened to this show knows, I am an injury – stickler, but I will lay off when a guy has come back and had a full season healthy from that terrible injury. And I thought Nick Chubb afforded himself pretty well last year, and now people are really down on him. This is a chance for Nick Chubb to gain back some of that draft momentum. I think he can do it, and I think Nick Chubb is actually going to work his way back into an early day 2 draft status if he can stay healthy. And I think this is his springboard right now.
Any way you slice it, college football is officially back this weekend, really back this weekend. No week zero stuff. Bryce Love will be knocked down from the Heisman favorite poll.
Love will go back to be a 2019 draft.
But, you know, you can't knock the kid for doing what he did against his opponent, especially in Australia. But, you know, you have to give him credit. It wasn't his fault, but yeah, I think Lamar Jackson puts himself back into the pole position as Heisman favorite, I think.
With JT Barrett a close second.
And Saquon Barkley and Darius Geis snipping.
You didn't even break stride there, man. I thought you were gonna. No,
I'm just shocked it wasn't JT Barrett, Mike Weber Jr. and Sam Hubbard.
Nick Bosa. But yeah, Nick Bosa. Come on. Now, this is the thing, man. Not trying to be a homer, but JT Barrett, 12-1 Heisman odds, redshirt senior for a team that might go undefeated. I mean, like, let's be honest. Who's going to beat Ohio State? If it's not Oklahoma in week three, I don't know who's going to do it. So if you're the betting type, go ahead and throw some bucks on that. And if you lose, I don't ever want to hear from you.
If you lose, you can contact our content manager at 4verts on Twitter.
Perfect.
He will refund every dime that you lose.
Not true, but he will at least console you.
But it's going to be an exciting year, and it's finally back. It's finally getting started. I mean, you'll be in Iowa still kind of drunk, but can you remember a season starting better than Florida State, Alabama in week one? Now, hopefully both teams.
Well, then last year, Alabama, USC was supposed to be that. And it was a disaster.
Well, they didn't have Heisman favorite.
Right.
Yet, so.
Well, I mean, that's why Sam Darnold shouldn't be a Heisman favorite, but I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that. You know, this applies, you know, to DeAndre Francois or whatever. But just temper your enthusiasm, because some of these games are going to end up really, really more out of whack than what you expect, and hopefully not in that kind of Alabama USC blowout type of way, hopefully in an enjoyable type of way. But the reason we picked the games that we picked is because we thought they had the most intrigue. So hopefully that holds true. And this is our last weekend of pure college football before the NFL takes place. And then we have a whole new set of complaints.
Exactly. Should be fun. Should be a lot of enjoyment happening here. We look forward to it. It's going to be a great season, and we'll be here every week to recap and preview kind of the draft goings on as they occur. So thanks for listening. As always, check us out on iTunes, check us out on SoundCloud. We're now on Stitcher Radio as well. And check us out on Blog Talk Radio, and you know, give us a subscription to whatever base you feel like is the best one for you, and how we're doing. We appreciate all the listens and all the downloads every week. So thanks as always for hanging out with us. We'll be back next week, and hopefully after a successful first weekend of college football. Have a good night, everybody.